After Talk do Bifrost?
Sim. Tive a ouvir, pronto, por acaso pensei que ia estar mais centrada na parte lá do Atomic Design.
Não,
e foi mais geral. Pois é isso.
Mas eu achei muito interessante porque ele toca em alguns assuntos que são importantes e são como todas as empresas, definir princípios e guidelines para uma série de pontos importantes numa empresa, a missão, os valores, a cultura.
Sim, o que é engraçado é que é mesmo a todos os níveis, não é? Eu podia pensar que era só mesmo ao nível do design propriamente dito, mas não, é mesmo a todos os níveis, organização, design, desenvolvimento.
Exato.
Eu achei engraçado mesmo logo no início ele reforçar aquela ideia de que o nosso trabalho é feito com outras pessoas e para outras pessoas. E isso é algo que eu acho muito... Pronto, às vezes sinto que... E eu lido mais com developers e não tanto com designers, mas sinto que às vezes esquecemos todos um bocadinho que nós estamos a fazer uma coisa que é para ser usada por uma pessoa. Claro que há sistemas que são desenvolvidos para interação entre máquinas, não é? E aí os problemas são diferentes. Mas acho que, pelo menos eu, cruzo-me muito mais com sistemas que desenvolvemos para serem utilizados por outras pessoas. E depois trabalhamos também em equipa, temos que falar com outras pessoas e tudo isto tem que funcionar em conjunto. E a questão, lá está, depois no fim, muitas vezes a questão tecnológica até nem é mais importante, é mesmo a questão humana. E até pegando naquilo que estavas a dizer há bocadinho, do lidar com outras pessoas e pronto, e passar a mensagem e ter as coisas todas a funcionar, não é?
Sim, no final de contas, acho que o que é mais importante é até a relação entre as pessoas do que propriamente a tecnologia em si. Porque é como tu dizes, temos que trabalhar em conjunto.
Tipicamente os sistemas mais interessantes e as coisas mais interessantes são resultado do trabalho de várias pessoas e que depois são usadas por ainda mais pessoas. E
Sim.
pronto, realmente é interessante isso.
Isto, claro que isto é um conceito para empresas com várias pessoas, com vários departamentos. Não estamos a falar, se calhar, de empresas pequenas ou só de uma pessoa. Claro que as empresas com uma pessoa também conseguem produzir valor e, como é óbvio, neste caso é para estruturas mais complexas em que, de facto, são precisas criar estes princípios e estas guidelines para que toda a gente esteja alinhada, tenha a mesma visão, reme para o mesmo lado.
Sim. Eu achei engraçado, eu estava a ouvi-lo a falar e estava-me a lembrar de uma entrevista que eu vi há algum tempo atrás dos membros de uma banda que é os Phoenix, não sei se conheces, uma banda francesa, mas pronto, toca em inglês. E eles estavam a dar uma entrevista e estavam a falar, a dizer que o último, que ao fazerem o último disco, assim, a maior parte do tempo foi pensado a definir o que é que eles iam usar, não é? Porque eles usam muito também eletrónica e então a quantidade de coisas que se consegue fazer com equipamentos eletrónicos é, pronto, é infindável. E o primeiro trabalho é o reduzir, o criar uma definição do que é que eles querem seguir, não é? De que caminho é que querem seguir e de como é que o vão seguir. E eles, é engraçado que estavam a dizer que eles a pensar, se... Eu acho que, pronto, nós demorámos X tempo a fazer este álbum, porque, pronto, demorámos mesmo muito tempo a definir o que é que realmente vamos utilizar, mas eu acho que se nós usássemos só dois ou três instrumentos que têm aqueles conjuntos de sons e ponto final, mesmo por muito alargados que seja, a gente conseguia fazer álbuns, tipo, todos os anos, e assim é, sei lá, de 4 em 4 anos, ou... Pronto, isto para a questão das constraints, não é? De definir as guidelines, o que é que te vai balizar, porque podes sempre tomar muitos caminhos, não é? Mas para além de poderes expressar, se tiveres a trabalhar numa equipa muito grande, ainda mais complicado vai ser porque cada um pode tomar o seu caminho, não é? Pronto, achei engraçado também este paralelo. E
Sim,
pronto,
é mesmo interessante como isto se aplica não só às empresas, mas a qualquer tipo de equipa, e mesmo uma banda de música. E eu gostei também do facto de eles escolherem três instrumentos, ou seja, é o keep it simple, está em todo lado.
Sim.
Como é que nós conseguimos fazer as coisas bem e o mais rapidamente possível, da forma mais fácil possível.
Sim, é mesmo. Pronto, é isso. É o keep it simple e é encontrar aquilo que funciona. A simplicidade normalmente é mais complicada de atingir do que as coisas, não é? Do que simplesmente atirar com mais tecnologia, atirar com mais coisas. E pronto, achei interessante, muito interessante esta talk. E é engraçado ver que ele tem feito, eu por acaso não sabia, depois estive a explorar um bocado. Tem feito alguns trabalhos também com o Dan Moll, que foi uma pessoa que também teve na Mirror há dois. Pronto, o Brad Frost foi o ano passado, o Dan Moll acho que foi há 2 anos ou
Sim,
três.
acho que sim.
Não é? Pronto, e é engraçado esta complementaridade. E pronto, acho que eles na Mirror têm conseguido sempre também fazer aí um bom mix. E pronto, e trazem sempre pessoas muito interessantes, não é?
Sim, este ano chamou-me a atenção o Mike Monteiro.
Sim. Já ouviste alguma coisa dele? Ele tem um podcast, agora acho que não tem havido muito, mas pronto, já leste ou ouviste alguma coisa dele?
Eu segui-o por causa do Mule Design,
Ah,
que acho que
sim.
é a agência dele.
Sim.
Achava que tinha conteúdo muito interessante,
Um
mas
bocado polémico ele,
sim, um bocadinho
não é?
controverso.
Sim.
Mas não, sinceramente não conheço o trabalho dele enquanto speaker.
Pois, eu também não. É mesmo só de ter visto em ter ouvido em alguns podcasts e parecia assim um personagem é isso, bastante polémico, muito pronto, deve ser divertida. As talks devem ser divertidas e não sei que temas é que ele vai focar, mas do que eu tenho ouvido recentemente tem falado muito da questão da ética, a ética do design e aquilo que nós podemos fazer para. Ou seja, não pormos de parte a nossa responsabilidade enquanto designers ou developers naquilo que fazemos. Pronto, não sei se vai ser esse o tema, mas pronto, acho que ele anda num registro interessante e polémico sempre.
O workshop dele chama-se Design is a Job.
Que é o nome do livro, porque eu já tentei comprar, mas não consegui, porque parecia muito interessante. E lá está, foi um dos livros também que o Dan Moll também referiu. Por acaso é um dos livros que está na minha lista de coisas para ler. Embora não seja propriamente da minha área diretamente, mas acho que também gosto de ir lendo coisas ao lado, acho que é importante. E depois temos o Jared Spool, que é, pronto, que eu acho que me lembro desde sempre. E desde que comecei a trabalhar de ver coisas dele, sempre ligado à usabilidade, até mesmo o guru, um dos gurus da usabilidade, se calhar assim comparado com o Alan Cooper, e pronto, e é também tem tudo para ser uma apresentação muito interessante dele.
Sim, concordo. E depois também estou a ver aqui speakers como o Vitaly Friedman, não sei bem se é assim que se diz, mas
Ah,
da Smashing
sim.
Magazine. Sim, ele
Sim.
já é um orador muito interessante. E
Sim.
a Lia Veru, que
Sim.
eu acho que esta foi a primeira pessoa que eu segui.
Pois, eu lembro que tu referiste outra vez que a gente. Pronto, quando falámos, que até era uma das oradoras que tu tinhas assim mais vontade de acompanhar, não era? De ver.
Sim, eu acho que ela veio à Mirror há
Ver.
2 anos atrás, não foi? E
Sim, sim,
depois,
sim, sim.
exatamente, ela desde sempre que tem um blog e fala muito sobre CSS, coisas difíceis feitas em CSS, e portanto foi das primeiras developers que eu acompanhei.
Sim, é uma. Como é que se diz? Uma gurua?
É um guru.
Estou a brincar.
Acho que não sei sobre mim.
Eu sei. Não, mas é engraçado que não. Pronto, agora também está muito em voga a questão do Women in Tech e tudo isso. Pronto, acho que ela a nível de CSS, eu comecei a acompanhar depois da Mirror e depois de tu teres falado e a quantidade de coisas espetaculares que consegue fazer e pronto, e que partilha, isso é que é fabuloso, a quantidade de informação que ela partilha é mesmo muito bom.
Exatamente, e o cargo que ela ocupa agora, que ela é investigadora no MIT. Vós têm um Women in Tech e, por acaso, esta lista de oradores da Mirror Conference deste ano está bastante equilibrada em termos de oradores femininos e masculinos, que é ótimo.
Sim. E pronto, não devia ser uma coisa que a gente notasse, não é? Devia ser assim uma coisa já standard,
Sim,
mas sim.
se bem que nas conferências mais tecnológicas acaba por acontecer um bocadinho isto, vemos mais oradores masculinos. Mas esta aqui, como também tem muita vertente de design e muita vertente de criatividade, acaba por também trazer essa diversidade.
Quem ainda não comprou o bilhete, ainda vai a tempo. Nós temos um promo code que depois vamos divulgar.
Sim, vamos divulgar nas redes sociais e fica também na descrição do post que faremos no nosso site.
Exatamente. E quem não foi ainda ao site da MirrorConf, pode ir. Lembra-se, Ana, quando nós três acedemos a primeira
Sim,
vez, as
assim.
reações? Desde o esta cena é espetacular até e fogo, isto põe o meu computador tipo a 100%, isto não faz sentido nenhum, não
Sim.
é? Foi curioso.
O site tá muito giro. Eu acho que o site
Tá.
tá qualquer coisa incrível.
Sem dúvida. Claro que eu ter aqui o processador a 100% é que já é aquela coisa.
Sim.
Pronto, não sei se é do Chrome que tá neste momento a ocupar 2,5 GB, mas deixa experimentar fechar esta janelinha. E aí está, passa de 90% para 3%.
Claro, este site
Por
está
isso.
tem muita tem muitas 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 coisas aqui, muito
Sim.
pesadas.
Sim.
Atualmente, para fazer isto, é a tecnologia que temos, portanto. Mas, de
Sim.
facto, quem concebeu e pensou nisto e quem implementou, pá, está de parabéns,
Sim. Sim.
porque é, de facto, uma coisa que nós não vemos por aí todos os dias na web. Pronto. Não
Sim.
esquecer que a MirrorConf vai acontecer nos dias 18 e 19 de outubro, em Braga.
Location, estou aqui a confirmar. Fórum Braga. São 2 dias, não é? Por isso podem sempre aproveitar para ficar a conhecer a cidade e tem os workshops.
E tem os workshops, exatamente. Portanto, nós temos um cupom de desconto de 10% para a compra de um bilhete de 2 dias e também para os workshops.
Se ainda não tiverem resultados, claro.
Exatamente.
Pronto, e nós então. Não sei se nos vamos conseguir ver na conferência. Eu ainda não sei se consigo ir. Tu provavelmente não sei se conseguirás vir até cá.
Não vou conseguir.
Mas portanto, vamos nos encontrar aqui no podcast daqui a umas semanas,
Exato.
talvez. Até daqui a um pouco.
Sim, tá lá.
I'd like you all to picture your perfect work environment, the environment that you've created for yourself that allows you to be productive and efficient in whatever it is that you're doing. Everyone have something in mind, right? Maybe it looks a little something like this, right? You got the noise-canceling headphones because of all those damn open office plans, right? You have a full cup of coffee, or I guess in your guys' case, it's like this big and full of concentrated caffeine, right? But you have some good music on, you have your screen set up the way that you like it, and you're ready to rock and roll, right? Time to do some great design work, time to do some great dev work. Of course, this isn't how work happens, right? We're bothered by our colleagues, by our clients, right? We're interrupted constantly, right? We have so many things going on, so many people pestering us, and we are taken out of our little oasis and have to sort of put out fires and do all these things, right? So, but this is the thing. Our work is done with other people, for other people, right? So this notion of sort of holding yourself up and going away and sort of working on your own genius creations is just far away from reality, right? So that means we have meetings. That means we have daily stand-ups. That means we have pair sessions. That means we have code reviews. That means we have post-mortems. That means we have to actually talk to people. That means endless Slack channels. Does anybody else feel this way about Slack? I'm like, oh my God, right? This is miserable, right? And this takes us away, and all we want to do is get back to our nice little oasis and do some work, right? But so this is a talk about how we work with each other, right? Because that matters, right? How do we talk to each other? How do we coordinate with other people And how do we collaborate with each other? Does it freak anybody out? This stuff is great. Give anybody anxiety here, right? We've sort of been talking about this over the last couple of days, right? And there's no shortage of these eternal battles on the web, right? So let's hear it, people that like spaces over tabs. Let's hear ya. No, I want to hear ya. Yes, spaces, all right. Tabs people, where are my tabs people at? All right, a little more boisterous. Photoshop? Let's hear it for Photoshop, all right. Sketch? Okay, all right. Vue, people in the house? Have people using Vue? Politely raise their hands, all right. Is it polite? How about React? Who's using React, yeah? This is good. And Jeremy talked about this earlier, right? There's no wrong answer, right? These are different tools that solve different problems, right? Or the same problem and sort of come at it from a different perspective. And what philosophy you and your team have is going to influence what tools you end up reaching for. But also, like what Jeremy was saying, a lot of these decisions end up having real impacts on the end user experiences we're creating, right? And so how we make these decisions really does matter. And we don't make these decisions alone. How many people have ever worked on a project where you end up using a certain CMS or a certain library or a certain design tool because somebody on your team is like super jazzed up about using it? You know what I'm talking about, yeah? Has that person ever been you? Be honest, right? But this is it. This stuff matters. So we have to figure out how to get alignment around this stuff. Because more cat gifts, because why not? If we're all left to our own devices, right? You have maybe four developers on your team and you all have these different opinions. You all have strong opinions on which tools to use and stuff. And we say, okay, everybody, let's go make a website, right? We end up with this sort of chaos. So we have to coordinate, we have to make some decisions. The other end of the spectrum is something a little different, right? A different cat gif, which is this sort of stifling rigidity, right? Where we're only going to use these tools and you can't ever diverge, or else you're fired, or whatever, right? So there's a spectrum here, and we have to make a decision on where we sit on this spectrum, and this is going to vary from team to team, right? You have to decide how much freedom do we want to have and how can we balance that with still sort of moving in the same direction, right? How can we align with one another to sort of land on a place that allows each of the people involved in the success of a project to be creative, to be expressive, to solve problems in a way that is efficient for them, but to also work together to a cohesive whole. So how do we get to this point where everyone on the team sort of knows their role in creating a solid product, knows their role in making that happen, and knows what role everybody else plays in the equation? So I think a great way to make this sort of stuff happen is to establish principles and guidelines. And I've been sort of thinking about this stuff a lot over the last couple of years, but it really presents itself as a hierarchy, right? We have this sort of company level at the sort of base of our pyramid. And I'll sort of start here, right? What, this might be a company, right? So you have some marketing people, you have some sales people, you have some HR people, right? You have customer support, you have accounting, you have all these different departments. And if you were to just ask these people, okay, everybody, let's business. Right? Everybody's going to sort of business the way that they were taught to business, right? It becomes a bit like the parable of the blind men and the elephant, right? Where all these blind men approach an elephant, they're asked to define what an elephant is, right? And the first blind man is up by the trunk and he touches it and he says, oh, an elephant is like a snake. And of course the person by the leg of the elephant says, oh, an elephant is like a tree, right? And of course, none of them have the full picture, right? So they're not able to properly define what this thing is. So principles and guidelines, I think, serve as this sort of bird's eye perspective that help give people alignment on sort of, you know, here's how we business, right? And Sitad mentioned earlier about sort of, you know, a mission statement and then product statements and stuff, and I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of nice overlap there because, as it turns out, speaking last means that I get to repeat what everybody else said, only much more articulately than me. So, hooray. So Charity Water is a nonprofit organization bringing clean and safe drinking water to people in developing nations. Boom. That's what we do. That means that the accounting people know that's what, you know, we're all here to do. That's what we're showing up to do. The HR people, the design team, everyone involved in the success of that company knows how to make that happen. But of course, that's just a sentence or a paragraph. So taking that a step further, we establish company values. Zappos sort of famously has these 10 company values that they use to sort of inform their company and everyone that works within it. Here's how you're expected to behave, right? Here's what we want from you, right? Create fun and a little weirdness, right? That's a cool company value. That sort of helps set the stage for here's what's appropriate behavior, here's what behavior we're going to frown on, right? And again, this applies to literally everyone that works for the company. But really, you could sort of express a mission statement, establish values, right? But really, the lived experience, every single decision, every single interaction is what constitutes a company's culture. And it's important to establish some guidelines and principles around your company's culture because otherwise, again, everyone's going to be left to their own devices. There's a great book called The Culture Engine by Chris Edmonds, and he talks about establishing an organizational constitution, which is a bit like a design system at the company level, right? That establishes liberating rules, and I like that phrase, right? Liberating rules that free people up to sort of focus on bigger and better problems rather than saying, I don't know, do we do it this way or do we do it this way, right? That's wasted effort. So that's at the company level. Now let's get into a department. Most of us probably work in, you know, a communications department of sorts, maybe a marketing department or whatever labels you use, but people that are communicating on behalf of a brand. Right, and you might have a marketing department that contains public relations and digital people and maybe some social people and, you know, a CMO and a vice president and stuff like that, right? And again, okay, everybody, let's do marketing, right? And we're going to go off and do marketing the way that, you know, we've all sort of learned and interpret that as we see fit. So what principles and guidelines do is get everyone who's communicating on behalf of a brand, of a company, on the same page. And this takes the form of brand guidelines, right? So Canonical, who makes the Ubuntu operating system for Linux, they have a fantastic brand assets, brand style guide that defines, here's our logo. Here's how to use that logo. Here's how not to use that logo. Here's the spacing around that logo. Here's our color palette, and here's when to use it. Here's our neutral color palette. Here's tints and tones for this color palette, right? Here's our font family, and here's how we're, you know, expected to use it. Here's these pictograms, these little sort of brand elements that we use throughout the experience, right? Here's these dot patterns that we might use on, you know, marketing materials that are in the print world, is it maybe a web page background or something like that, right? But really defining what these things are and how people should use them, right? And that helps create alignment, you know, irrespective of which end of the pool you're on, right? Whether you're a print person, a digital person, a native person, a web person, or whatever, you're all on the same page. Another really helpful tool is voice and tone guidelines, right? So MailChimp, which we've already heard about today and yesterday, you know, has this really cool cartoon chimpanzee, right? You know where this is going, right? There we go. But so they have this really sort of fun brand, sort of cheeky tone of voice, humorous, and that's great. But their voice and tone guidelines, created by Kate Kiefer-Lee and a bunch of other smart people, really help set the stage for how they need to talk to their users in a bunch of different contexts. So for a success message, right, this is what they have in their guidelines, right? So if somebody had just launched a marketing campaign or sent out an email blast or whatever, right? The person is feeling relief, pride, and joy, and they're thinking, "Woo! I finished this week's campaign. Now I can finally enjoy the weekend. That's great." Right? So MailChimp should respond with maybe the chimpanzee coming out going, "Yeah, fine piece of work. You deserve a raise. That's great." Right? But let's say the user just spammed 300,000 people. Right? Or let's just say your credit card got declined. You don't want the little chimpanzee dancing out and going, "Ah, looks like your credit card was declined. Sorry about that." Right? And this stuff matters. Like, especially, you know, developers, we end up writing a lot of copy. Right? That's why you get all those hilarious error messages throughout, you know, every banking application you've ever used. Right? So this helps everyone communicating on behalf of the brand to all sort of speak the same language and present things in the right way. Then we get into teams, right? So now we're within the sort of digital walls of your organization, and you have a bunch of different parts to your products, or maybe multiple products or a bunch of different products, right? And you have different teams creating stuff for those different products. Okay, everybody, let's do good digital work, right? Again, we're moving off. We're going to go off and do things how we see fit. And what that leads to, of course, is, but you don't understand, right? And we've all heard this. No. Like, you know, I'd love to sort of share this with you or this solution, but, you know, this particular use case is just so specific. And, you know, the other person's like, I know brand colors are red, but like, I really, 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 really love purple, right? Like, so can't we just, right? And so with principles and guidelines, what we're able to do is align these disparate groups of people all doing digital work, right, to move in the right direction. And this is the land of design systems, right? This is what design systems help assist with. So there's a bunch of different definitions of what a design system is, and I like to think of it as sort of the story of how your organization designs and builds products, right? And I like to sort of put it through the lens of a new hire, right? If you hire a new designer, if you hire a new developer, and say, you know, how are we going to do work here, right? Like, what should I be paying attention to? What should I be doing, right? How should I, you know, write this code? How should, you know, what sort of brand personality should I be following, right? The design system is the answer to that, right? And so over the last couple of years, we've been seeing a ton of different companies release their design systems into the world, which is fantastic. Salesforce's Lightning Design System is fantastic. Google's Material Design is probably the most famous example of a design system. IBM's Carbon Design System, one that we created for a giant organization called the Unity Design System, basically helped sort of galvanize a lot of these principles and round them up under one roof. So we have design principles that sort of underpin the entirety of the system. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But it also had points of view on things like data entry, things like navigation. Here's how we think about color and in what sort of proportions, right? Here's why that matters, right? Here's our code conventions. Here's UI components, right? Here's all of our different form controls, and here's a specific component, and here's some guidelines around how to properly use that thing. So design system can include a bunch of stuff, right? There's a bunch of ingredients that make up collectively a design system, and which ingredients are included are going to vary based on the needs of your organization, right? But it's at this point that we're able to sort of, you know, round up all of this institutional knowledge and sort of consolidate it and present it in one place. So now we get into an individual team. So now we take, without a design system, without any sort of, you know, sense of you know, direction, all that great stuff that C. Todd was just talking about, right? You have different disciplines working on a project, right? You guess where this is going, right? This is, right? Let's all do things, right? And again, without like a product roadmap, without that sort of guidance, right? You're going to get the situation. So, principles and guidelines, once again, right? And this is sort of fostered through the design system, but also a clear product plan, roadmap, like C-Todd was talking about earlier. And then lastly, we have our individual disciplines, right? So you might work with other designers, right? Or you might be a front-end person and you work with other front-end people. As it turns out, developers have opinions about things. Do you know this? Like, this happens. So whenever we're sort of weird, I know, like it's a sort of might come to news to some of you, but you know, whenever you're left to your own devices and you ask a room full of front-end developers, let's build a website, again, same thing, right? So how do we establish alignment? How do we get everybody on the same page? This takes the form of code style guides, right? Things that are in the front-end world, at least. Right now that we have all of these different CSS methodologies and different approaches to, you know, how to structure front-end code, we have to decide, is this how we do it? 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 Right? This gzips quite nicely. Good for performance. Right? So we have to come together as disciplines and establish, hey, how are we actually going to do good work together, right? So if you're lucky, you work at a place that has solid conventions in place, right? Has these points of view, has a perspective, and hopefully you should be able to draw a straight line through the middle of that pyramid, right? All of that stuff should be in alignment, as in, you know, the stuff, the visual design that your team is working on should align with the company's mission, right? And should align with the brand guidelines and stuff like that. But design systems, I think, really focus on the people creating digital products at an organization or for organizations. And so that's what we're going to talk about. There's a ton of different benefits of establishing a design system. The main one, from a user perspective, is that you get a more consistent, cohesive experience, right? So the first time you encounter a particular form field, right, you have to learn that, right? Claudio was just talking about this, right, where you don't want to rock the boat too much, right? You don't want to sort of disrupt things and just burn everything down and replace it with other things. But because people take time, people use your products again and again, and as they use your products more, they get familiarized with them, right? So the first time they encounter a certain widget, say a date picker, right, by the time they get to the end of the flow and they're presented with another date picker for whatever reason, right, they know how to respond to that, right? They're familiar with it. I've seen this before. And that allows them to get through that checkout flow faster, whatever it is they're trying to do, right? But the rest of these benefits really benefit you, right? The people in the room making this work happen, right? And the main thing is faster production, right? Rather than reinventing the card component for the umpteenth time, right? Firing up an empty sketch document and, you know, doing that again and again and again, you could focus your efforts on more worthwhile tasks, right? And launch more things in faster time. They establish a shared vocabulary so that designers and developers and project managers and everybody and the clients, they're all speaking the same language, right? So you get less of this, oh yeah, we call that the top bar. Oh no, that's the gray bar. No, we call that the utility bar. And you know, the front end people are like, oh, it's marked up as, you know, something else, right? Makes things easier to test. All that great stuff that Eduardo was just talking about as far as performance goes. You're able to sort of isolate components, make those things fast as crap, right? And make them more flexible, more accessible. And then anywhere those patterns get deployed, boom, you get that stuff for free, which is great. It's a useful reference to keep coming back to, right? You reach for a data table. It's like, what should I be considering as I implement this data table, right? And then lastly, I think this is a really key component to this. These design systems really do serve as this future-friendly foundation for all work to come, right? As we've been hearing about so much over the last 2 days, right? This field is rapidly changing, right? There's more and more stuff coming on the horizon, more and more stuff that's entering our field of vision, right? What is our perspective on VR, right? All that great stuff Gabe was talking about earlier. It's like, you know, well, a design system is a place for that institutional knowledge. It's a place to articulate that point of view, right? So as new things come to be, right, chatbots, conversational UIs, anything that's coming, but also just evolutions in how we do good UI work and design trends and things like that, right? We're able to, once we have this foundation in place, we could iterate and evolve and grow things and, you know, take all those things that we've learned from real product work and how people are using our real stuff and feed that back into the system. So that sounds great, yeah? Hope you're all jazzed up about design systems. I sure am. So how do we actually make them happen? It's been so great to hear so many talks and people referencing user research and actually talking to people as a good first step in sort of learning, you know, what it is we should actually build. So I love, at the beginning of our design system projects, talking to users. And what's strange is, yes, we talk to people who use the actual products themselves, but we also talk, the users of a design system are also designers, developers, right? The actual teams that are helping make digital work, right? A design system really does serve them. So these are some of the things that I've heard from a client I was working with earlier this year, right? You could probably carbon date our UIs based on the design, right? You know, so it's just travel back through time. The main challenges are the existing thousands of lines of code, acquisitions, and existing suite of technologies that make up $1 billion a year. We'd like to not lose that $1 billion. Fair point, right? We'll try not to try to avoid that. There's a lot of institutional knowledge here locked up in people's heads, right? Slack channels are great, but it becomes a scavenger hunt to find information about how something's supposed to work. For a basic expand collapse pattern, the devs spent 2 days going to different teams to find the code and still had to rebuild it themselves. Right? So this helps paint the picture of what the pain is, right? You know, all these product teams doing all this work, what is the pain and how might a design system actually help with that, right? So this is a crucial first step in just sort of getting a sense of what a design system at your company needs to do. So from there, then we do our formal kickoff workshop. And we used to use this opportunity as or use this day as an opportunity to sort of brainstorm and stuff like that. But what ended up happening is that the highest paid people in the room or the most extroverted people in the room end up sort of bulldozing these conversations, and no, you know, junior developer is going to, you know, stand up to their CTO in the middle of one of these meetings. So what we now do is we sort of use that as an opportunity to sort of take that research and actually start presenting it to them and start gathering broad consensus around this. And this might sound familiar because we've been hearing about this from a few of the speakers earlier today, which is great. I have the good fortune of working with Josh Clark on a lot of projects, so this is him sort of presenting what we've heard through our user interviews. And once we sort of bucket out the common themes and the common goals that could happen for a project, and we sort of paste them up on the wall, and we get the sticky notes out, because of course it's a design process, and we get them to vote. And what we end up with is a nice heat map of priorities for what this project needs to do, right? And I love everything about Jeremy's talk, of course, but he talks about, when he's talking about the HTML principles, where he talks about in cases of conflict, right? Ah, that's it right there, because that's inevitable, right? All of these are valid goals for a project, right? You could, you know, slap them all up here. This one says that has no votes. It says increase ad flexibility. That was from the ad guy, naturally, right? But even he didn't vote on it, right? So this is the thing. Like, everybody gets their individual, you know, sort of goals out of their system, but as a group, we're able to sort of come together and say, you know, there's limited time, there's limited budget, there's limited money. You know, how do we, you know, sort of align on what really matters, right? How do we make sure if this thing had to do three things really, really well, these are the three things? Right? Not to say that we're not going to address those other things. We're just going to, you know, in cases of conflict, this takes priority over this. And you could do the same for, we've done exercises with different features of a style guide, right? Where we sort of talk to different people and sort of brainstorm over, oh, cool, like we could add a theme switcher, or we could add sort of UX guidelines, or we could add sort of framework-specific code snippets. And so, again, getting this heat map of, cool, what does a good style guide look like for this project? And that helps us prioritize how we're going to design and build this thing. So the priorities workshop really does help get this broad consensus. All the stakeholders involved in the success of the product is able to get together and go, come out of the room at the end of the day and sort of feel pretty good. And at the end of the day, we regroup, we sort of reflect back, here's what we heard, and just sort of start establishing next steps. I like showing this photo. This is our friends at about.com. Some of the earlier photos I was showing were these guys. And we did some work with them, and these were all the people involved in the kickoff. I love showing this picture because they don't even fit in one photo. This is not like three people off to the side going off and doing things unilaterally, right? This is their QA engineers, this is junior designers, this is senior designers, this is VPs, this is everybody, right? Because a design system needs to be born of the actual organization. So we regroup, we establish next steps, we have a pizza party, it's all very wonderful and lovely, and then we get to work. And one of the first things we do to sort of translate a lot of the stuff we learned away from just sort of sticky notes is to establish a set of design principles, right? And we've heard a bit about design principles already throughout the conference, but design principles really are the guiding light for a software application or for a design system or for an organization, right? They articulate the fundamental goals that all decisions can be measured against, thereby kept the pieces of the project moving towards an integrated whole, right? So what we found is establishing design principles is one, hard work, and two, sort of constitutes a couple different parts. Process, and then the product itself will end up, the design system itself will encapsulate within it its own set of design principles. So for a design system that we worked on last year, these were some of the principles that we were following as the creators of the system in order to make sure that we're meeting the goals, right? So make the best thing the easiest thing. Design for grab-it-quick efficiency. This was an organization with 500 developers and two designers. So that was fun. And these developers were paired with like a business person. The business person would sort of bark, here's what we need to build. And the developer says, okay. So like UI design and like all that stuff was about as far from their minds as possible. So we had to fit the workflow, right? We had to fit that culture in order for the design system to be successful, right? We could write all this sort of thoughtful stuff and write paragraphs of text about certain things and perspectives, but if the developer doesn't have time to read any of that, it's all for naught. And then the product itself ultimately ended up baked within it this set of design principles. So just enough interface, strong and direct. This was a big enterprise, so it's like strong and direct equals, you know, no rounded corners, right? Equals, you know, sort of a straightforward primary color palette, right? It's not, you know, not a lot of the great design work we've been seeing from people like Claudio and Henri. It's like the opposite of that, right? And that's fine because, again, you know, that fits the goals of the system. So we see these design principles baked into lots of different products, right? Lots of the operating systems of the world, iOS, Windows, Material Design, have these principles baked in. And those design principles underpin and influence every single design, development, business decision that gets made, right? Like I said earlier, though, these things are crazy hard to create. Having lived through this process like a bunch of times, it's really, really, really challenging. This post by Jared Spool is really fantastic. He talks about some questions you want to ask yourself when creating design principles, right? Does it come from research, right? Is this actually born of reality, or are these just sort of truisms, right? Does it help you say no most of the time? That's pretty interesting, right? So take a principle like strong and direct, right? That helps you answer those questions of, you know, oh, look at this like cool, really rounded, really beveled, or really sort of drop-shadowed, fuzzy sort of thing. It's like, yeah, that doesn't really mean strong and direct, right? Does it distinguish your design from your competitors? Is it something you might reverse in a future release? And that's a sort of a cool one, right? Because a design principle is a point of view, right? It is taking a stand, right? Again, it's not a truism. It's not
make it clean and simple,
right? It's like, would you ever reverse it? Is the opposite of that true? It's like, let's make this really hard and complicated and cumbersome and complex. Like, it's really hard to imagine too many scenarios where that's true, right? Have you evaluated it for this project? And then also, is this meaning constantly tested, right? These are living, right? They're meant to adapt and change like the rest of the system. So, design principles, good idea. Good idea to get off the ground at the beginning of the project, but it's never too late to establish them. But this is important, right? Once we're on the same page with these principles, then we can start getting tactical. Then we can start getting into the weeds. But always, always, always have these design principles in mind, right? And I love what Jeremy said. I think it's so incredibly important to realize that we are in the driver's seat, right? None of this is determined for us, right? All of these things, right, from SAS variables to, you know, product roadmaps, to performance, to whatever. These are all human inventions, right? We have the ability to guide those human inventions. We have the ability to make new inventions. And so I hope that you take what you've learned the last couple days and make that happen. Do great things. So thank you. Super good. Thanks.